So first of all, welcome. Welcome to day two of the Change Leaders Master Plan Live. Yesterday, we covered quite a bit of territory. We've still got some to go. But where I would like to start today, because I know that even after yesterday, you know, I had a lot of, as I thought about things, where to go and what to do. Oh, wonderful. Looks like James might be in. I was wanting to invite you to give some reflections on, or, you know, any kind of biggest takeaway. I'd like to hear from you. What was perhaps your biggest takeaway from yesterday? Now that you're here this morning, you reflect yesterday. I'm sure multitudes of thoughts were there, but probably by now some things will stand out. And I'd be curious to hear from each of you your biggest takeaway.
Well, my biggest takeaway, one thing that really stuck to me most was the being a savior kind of syndrome, understanding that in as much as we're trying to make a difference and also trying to be social entrepreneurs and change agents, we are not Superman. We're not Superwoman. We can win some and lose some, and all we need to do is to give it an effort and you know, do the things that we have the ability to do, relate with the people that we can relate. Not everybody wants this problem solved. Then it made me realize something. When I worked for an agency, we ran a program that was geared towards taking people from homelessness and putting them somewhere to live.
Right.
We came to realize that some people who are actually homeless do not want to get housed because they're used to that system, and they don't want any responsibilities. Right. They don't want anybody sending them anything in the mail in terms of bills.
Right.
They're okay and contented with whatever they're doing, and it is working for them. The only thing you can do for them is make them feel comfortable being homeless. That's all. So, and that kind of made me go back to that time. And it's now also encouraged me personally that pursuing the customized approach system that we're trying to develop, where it is based on the beneficiaries, what they really want to, and us giving them the support to be able to accomplish that, rather than what we really want them to become and all that. So it's given me some kind of a catalyst and support to continue to develop that system and work based on that, so that we won't be burnt out, we won't feel disappointed that we didn't reach anything. Just a matter of giving someone the tools to be comfortable where they are and do what they want to do. Another thing also that I took away was the importance of investing in people. As NGOs, we have two things that we struggle with. One is financial, the other one is the human capital. Now, most of the time, people tend to pursue the financial part and forget about the human capital. The human capital in terms of the volunteers, the interns, board members, and the beneficiaries. Rather, we're looking at everything based on how much am I going to get for this program, to this program and that program. And at the end of the day, the people running the program fall apart. So, but investing in people, that human capital element, and in time, that's key. I would say that's 75% of the whole thing. Then the other funding part, yes, we need finance to accomplish some of the things we need. However, no matter how much you throw, how much money you throw at something, without that human capital element, it would not work. So, and it's beginning to also give me that, you know, sometimes you think, okay, I'm the only crazy man in the field, until you see somebody else who's on the other side of the field screaming the same thing you're screaming, and another person, then you find out that I'm not just the only one. There are a bunch of crazies out there. So I'm glad I'm in a good company of crazies. So, you know, focusing on that human capital part, that was my big takeaways from yesterday.
Very good. I'm really pleased to hear that, because the kind of the human capital side, the people side, are kind of like the big rocks. Have you done that experiment or seen that? And I didn't think of finding this, probably a thing on YouTube that physically shows the big rocks, small rocks. And when you've got a certain amount of space, when you put the big rocks in first, you can get all of the rocks, because the little ones will fall in around the bigger ones, to get them all in that same space. But if you put the little rocks in first, the big ones don't have room. It's just a very simple concept of saying, get your big rocks in place first, then a lot of the time the little ones will just fill in very easily all around the big rocks. And in this sense, getting the right people in the right place at the right time and focusing on building their capacities. Yes, and you've still got to be doing all of that other, you've got to be working on the human capital, the social capital, and your financial capital, your regular typical capital. But your big rocks are your people, and really taking care of them, because then they will also be the ones that will help you bring in those other two pieces profoundly. Very pleased. And then the other one, I'm the savior syndrome and that kind of thing. Yeah, maybe you'll eventually become Superman, but we don't, we sometimes start off as super boys and super girls, and then we grow into that. So maybe you will become, but when at the wrong time and the wrong place, there again. And the piece, like you said, about there are some people who just simply don't want to be helped. And even there, sometimes that's at this time, they don't want to be helped. And so when you relate to them in the way that the kind of way that you mentioned about helping them feel comfortable where they are, then they will know when they feel like they need something different, they'll know who to come to. And because all of us, again, that journey concept, none of us stay in the same place. That's one person who's comfortable today out living on the street. He might get sick tomorrow and then realize that he wants something different. So then he could circle back around and come back to you, having had the experience with you of your, compassion and understanding and not trying to force him to do something that he didn't want to do. So there's kind of the in the moment situation with those and the bigger picture. And later on, I'll go over one more thing about the responsibility to and responsibility for, which addresses this this savior syndrome thing, which is when we go beyond, it goes back, I guess, to the very simple concept of, know what we can change and know what we can't. And we can't change everything. We really aren't the almighty. We can perhaps get an ear every now and then, but we certainly can't wave our magical wand there on that one. Thank you so much, Ifani. I'm delighted to hear that.
I thought about a specific topic, but the day in general. I work voluntarily in the Jewish Youth Federation, Mexican Jewish Youth the youth to make their institutions more professional in a way, professionalize them. And we usually bring in people that have a very strong project management or business background. Mm-hmm. So they can apply like that kind of knowledge to it and also to the Federation itself. But I realized that it's that like you don't have to, in, if you do that, you can lose the human factor. Mm-hmm. Like the human element, you can lose it very easily. So even if it works like to know how to structure a project and how to like have make it to have a beginning, a middle, and an end, mm-hmm. it's not the best idea to base off that, because the goal is not the same. It's not like it's not even close. So there is a way to professionalize an institution
absolutely
without having to take practices from something. Like you can learn from it, but only to a certain extent. You can't professionalize your institution based on what a profit maker does. Mm-hmm.
You're cutting in and out a little bit, Daniela. I'm not sure why.
Let me try to change my... Is that better?
As you talk, well, I'll hear. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So that was your reflection after yesterday. And again, that's actually the point that you observed and that came away with, I think, is a little bit, dare I use the big rock thing again, but when you get that human element clearly in the center, then absolutely you have to have financial structures and practices and budgeting and clarity about what you're doing in those very specific ways. But without that human core, at clarity about that human core, and without aligning those things in a sense around that human core, then it as a social enterprise, as a social change endeavor, it gets a little knocked, you know, to one side or the other. And so then you're not really moving forward in helping really bring about the social change that is sought. So thank you. It's good to hear. I think you bring that kind of thing into and provide that core, and absolutely you want to get your experts in human resources set up in filing your taxes, or even if you're unincorporated, but you know, or not necessarily fully responsible. Maybe some other part of the organization is more responsible for all of the financials and the submitting to the government. But you've always got those things that you have to deal with as an organization. But keeping them in the right perspective and in the right place instead of in the core is what is really important. I'm very happy to hear that was a reflection. Wonderful. Popcorn, as Marilyn said.
Hi.
Hi, Fernanda.
How are you? Well, I think one of my main takeaways from yesterday was understanding that each of us is living our own journey, mm-hmm. With challenges and difficulties. And that means that when we are trying to impact other people, we need to think about when aligning those journeys. Mm-hmm. For that, first of all, we need to think on the importance of systems, of creating our own systems that will work and that will understand the people we are working with. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the other most important thing that I get from yesterday, the importance of stakeholders, that you will have multiple stakeholders, that they are really important, and that you need to know, or well, you need to understand what are their necessities, mm-hmm. What are their priorities, and what's the role they play in your own journey, mm-hmm. in order for you to be empathic and to really get to know the people and to work with them and make changes that are that really contributes to what they are doing, because that would change the way they feel about a project, and that will transform an interest to a commitment. And I think that that would be like the most important things I got from yesterday, even though I also agree with most of the things that Efania was talking about, because I think he was also talking about responsibilities and about well, the importance of people that we talked about yesterday, and I totally agree with.
Yeah, because again, when we do more genuinely and fully understand and dig into our various stakeholders, then we're able to optimize their engagement. And high performance is all about optimizing. It's not just that you can talk to somebody, but what kind of conversation can you have that really helps feed into the objectives that you have down the road. So the whole process of taking the time to really pay attention to your stakeholders, and not just the easily said, hi, how are you? I'm good. Yes. You know, but digging into that, taking the time periodically to do that, that gives you the understanding that you need to optimize. So you're not just going along as an organization, but you're building a base, a real sound base for having optimal relationships and optimal outcomes. And you can, I think you can see that without that piece, there's so much that's missing. And then when we don't really make those deeper connections, we can't utilize, it's almost like the fuel of the human soul, you know, that can get inspired and energized and so much more than when you just, you know, get through the day. So there is just, you can just 2 times, 10 times, whatever, it's, you know, it's a little hard to totally turn it into numbers. But I think you can see that the potential of taking this as your basic approach and then going into all of the other stuff that there are so many other people out there teaching about. And it's absolutely needed. All of the, you know, the stuff that you go and your angel investors will make sure that you learn about this and that and the other thing in all of the business spheres and everything else, or your accelerator investors, whatever it is. But in the end, when you've got this piece in place, it can just multiply it so much more. So yeah, wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Not looking at anybody in particular, Grace.
I guess like the thing that's really coming up for me from yesterday, I mean, yeah, to be very honest, like it was a little bit difficult to really take in a lot of things yesterday. Today's better. but really what my reflections are around is, kind of like the human element too, just in handling things. You talk about the human element and how that's the basis around which you build a system, but also that's on the micro level of yourself, right? In order to be able to work, to operate yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I guess what was coming up for me was like, you know, there's a tendency, and I'm not the only one, I'm sure, like there's a tendency to go into like problem solving mode where like you completely like get rid of your emotions and you just like just don't even engage there. You're just like, this is what I have to do.
They're a problem.
and like the danger of that, like what I was like reflecting on is like the danger of that is that like sometimes you just need to do that, right? Because sometimes like things just need to happen.
Yeah.
Like but the danger of doing that for too long is that it actually it can start to erode the relationships and the human element of like your everything. Larger system. Because, you know, like for instance, even just, you know, like what comes up is like in my work, like I came from more of a business minded organization to this organization, and like this organization really focuses on the human element. Like, mm-hmm. like their strength is the human element, I would say. And I had to learn to like, you know, even in emails be like, oh, like, you know, I hope this email finds you well. Like, you know, that like, I'm usually like straight to the point, and mm-hmm. that can come off across as like mm-hmm. abrasive, and is actually, you know, detrimental to those inner workings that we're talking about, the what do you call it, the sub I don't have words today, I'm sorry, but like those hidden things that
pre-rational,
yeah, there we go, pre-rational things. So yeah, I don't know, just like the experiences that I was having yesterday, like I needed to kind of like check myself and like remember that part too, of being present to my emotions so that I can be, you know, fostering good relationships while handling mm-hmm. situations. So
yeah, and I think learning how to be more masterful in our lives, and this is part of our long journey through life, you know, is how to handle all of these elements. You know, you can say the three brains. That's just kind of showing us the roots in our very existence of all of these amazing facets of human beings. But even there, just I guess one of the ways I think about it is that just like our bodies, you know, we get up in the morning, we go through the day, we get tired, we go to sleep at night, and then we go through this rejuvenation process at nighttime. Now, you know, even if you're a little bit tired, generally speaking, we don't just sit down in the middle of the day and go to sleep. I mean, sometimes, you know, we have naps, and people have tried to bring in the power nap system, and you know, whole cultures have been built around weather and temperature and siestas in the afternoon and the way they like to live. And I think there, you know, there's really something to that. But you know, we're in this particular system. But the fact remains that we need to sleep. Our brains need to get cleaned out, quite literally. There's this cleaning process at nighttime of all of the, you know, snipping that goes on by the glia in the brain and all kinds of stuff. I find this out for my daughter, who does now stem cell research or whatever, but neuroscience background. But beyond that, we always need to take the time to, you could say, sleep on things. And the same thing for addressing our emotions. And yeah, we can't always do it in the moment, but we do need to take the time to reflect and to assess, and then to even, and when necessary, to, you know, help certain aspects of our emotional lives to be processed, dealt with. And when we don't do that, yeah, in the moment, many times, as you say, you know, about to jump out of an airplane, yeah, it's not the right moment to, you know, go into a, you know, a session. You know, you deal with that later on. But the thing is, when you don't do it, as you say, when you don't do it, that's when the problems really come in. And again, that's where I just want at this stage to encourage all of you to, A, pay attention to this, to be aware, because awareness is your first step and it's very powerful. And then when you build that into your day-to-day life, then you don't have to deal with the same level of problems. Will you deal with challenges in your life? I would say yes, no matter what we do. And even the most perfectly prepared and daily ritual person, you know, is still going to face challenges. But then they are better fed, better, you know, they've got a better state, that, you know, everything is just better to be able to handle the challenges, because that is life. Our journeys will go up and down. And we don't smooth out all of those challenges by having a good personal habits and things like that. But because the hills and the mountains and the valleys are still going to be there, but as we address them, yeah. So again, happy to hear that these pieces, which are very important long-term, and we do see so much, and I mean, burnout, what was it? May of 2018, there was a survey that was done amongst like 500,000 or more techs. 57% of them self-identified as being burnt out. 57%. So in that startup world, you know, and increasingly techs are needed in our world because, you know, so much of what we do now is reliant upon technology. So if that many, and what's the average age of tech, you know, and that's in all levels, you know, and even CIOs, the chief information officers of big companies, so many of them, they're assumed to last. And this was from a report earlier this year, and I apologize, I'm not remembering exactly the source, but if you want it, I can find it and send it to you. But it's like the expectation of a CIO to last in a position is like somewhere around about 2 years, because then they deal with burnout. So there's something that's not being done quite right. As much as a lot of the systems, the agile systems, the capacity for organizations, new organizations, to bring their products quickly to market. They've developed amazing processes, and many of which need to be adopted by the more mature organizations. Pieces of it, not all of it, but pieces of it, absolutely. And the mindset of that kind of quick, fast, innovative thinking, because there are systems that facilitate that. But when they are not, you know, around this sound core of caring for the human element, because that's what's common to all of these companies. I don't care which country, I don't care what sector, I don't care whether it's, you know, production line, meat packing, farmers, you know, politicians, the human core piece is at the core of all of it. And so having the systems in corporations, in organizations, which is an amazing social progress, you know, it's what has allowed humanity to progress to the state where we are, where we're global, or, you know, global, where we're global, and where we can fly around the world, or we used to fly around the world. Americans can't fly around the world anymore, but anyway, no, nobody wants Americans in the moment, and understandably, but where we have gotten to, and, you know, just in this last century, is because of corporate structure, organizational structures and mechanisms. And then the latest innovation of these is really with, you know, in the tech world, and the, you know, the agility of that tech world to be able to develop and evolve is amazing. Which is why I want to bring in some of those elements into what I, you know, the pieces that I provide. But again, just without that core element, even they can get lost. So, yeah, go ahead, Ifani.
Grace, you're not alone on that. I think we'll struggle with that. And I'm here thinking about, you know, the different structures, and how do we connect these structures? Because you come to one particular structure, they believe, you know what, without us, nothing is going to happen. the other structure feels without us that it's going to happen. And coming from a background where you are meant to solve problems without fires. So everything to you is a fire and it's got to be put out. And after putting out the fires, you're not trained and conditioned that probably the fire damaged certain things. And then you have to start the process of building because you're wired to put out fires. So everything is, I put out this fire, I put out this fire. And in trying to put out fire, you also make some damages. Because once you put that water hose, it's going to get everything wet and messy. Now, you rebuild. So we are wired that way, put out this fire. And nobody tells us, okay, after you put out a fire, do damage control, clean it up and make it shine better than you made it before. So you go into a situation where you're putting out fires, and then after putting out the fires, you catch flak for putting out the fires because now you've made some mess. Yep. And so you start going into this self-preservation mode and why did I do this? Why do I do that? And it begins to affect the confidence. And either it begins to affect you in a negative way or it makes you become arrogant that you no longer care.
Yeah, one way or the other.
Or feeling, and either way. So how do we actually find the balance and build a bridge within this whole system? So at the end of the day, it's going to be a win-win for everyone, and you don't feel like, you know.
And one at the meta level, at the kind of the next level up, that's where the whole concept of alignment comes in, because those skills you have are absolutely needed. And the human element that perhaps is the strength of your organization is needed. The challenge is to align those two so that they're more complementary rather than oppositional. And that can come again through the alignment of goals and then the agreement of goals. And so then even when you do make a mess and everything's wet, they will understand. And you will understand. Anyway, it's just as, you know, as Afanyi says, yeah, firefighters do make a mess. And that's why you've got somebody else who comes in and cleans up after the firefighters. Creates jobs, right? but anyway. but anyway, right there, I think it's just, as I said, at the meta level, part of what can help resolve those apparent differences, and sometimes they really are just current perspective, the way we look at things and the mindsets with which we're going about things, as they adjust, we can begin to see, oh, you know, you're not really my enemy. You're not really fighting me. Where, you know, yes, there's tension. And in any situation, there's tension, but it doesn't have to be animosity. But we can read it as animosity. So a lot of this comes back to mindset issues or attitudinal or our capacity to really look at things from a bigger point of view and take things forward rather than just in the moment, the very personal seeming difference. But, you know, these are all parts of the journey in leadership and in life and you know, yeah. Anyway, and James, I don't know whether James wasn't here and I'm not sure that you're able to speak. Would you like to just introduce yourself if you can speak? I'm not sure whether you're able to unmute yourself, James.
Yeah. Hi, Karen. Hi, how
are you? Hi, how are you?
Fine. Well, it's been a very wonderful and very interesting session. It's been very much amazing, been much great extent of knowledge that being the rest section of this program. Let me introduce myself. Okay, I'm James. I'm a social worker, a community developer, and that's what I do basically. That I try and for community is challenges, and being a social worker, responsibility is on me to be able to solve some specific challenges. We've been working for different communities, I've been able to work with different sets of people, ranging from people with persons with disabilities. I've been able to work with young children as well. But right now I'm much more actively involved in community development. The level of literacy in Nigeria is on the very high side, which has had a lot of adverse effects on the development of the nation. You find out that people are not in the knowledge of many things, even up to the tune of basic hygiene. Just taking good water that is potable, take water from things, and communities are not well organized. We need people that have the foresight that can actually come around with them, help them develop their community. As a social worker, I work based on self needs of each community that I work with or any target group that I work with. If there is a need, the community has self needs for a change, it will be a lot easier process for the change. However, there will be some challenges that are peculiar to some situations, like one that I'm handling right now. There is a community that doesn't have good water, they take water from the stream, and I've been able to get a grant to provide potable water for the community. We started work in the community providing the potable water. Then all of a sudden, after completing the first phase of the project, the local chief said that they should bring money for the community, that they should, what they want now is money, and the resources that are available is not for the local chiefs or for the indigenous, it's for the community as a whole to execute a project. So, you know, there are some challenges that they are kind of peculiar to some situations. I'm not saying that it will always be like that in all situations, but I have actually been able to learn a lot so far, and I hope that the knowledge that I've been able to gain, I'll be able to put into practice, because I'm more of a field worker. When the discussions are going on and I get to hear all of those technical terms, it amazes me, like, wow. Like, but there are just a little kind of differences. The theoretical world and the real pragmatic world, when you're actually dealing with these people, and the challenges are much more than expected. So I would like to hand over to Karen for now.
James, thank you so much. It was hard to understand absolutely everything. Might I ask you, I hope that you can participate or listen to most of what goes on today. And then if at the end of the day or first thing tomorrow morning, what I noticed worked really well with you was when you made that short video on your phone and posted it to Facebook, then we can see and hear. We can see and hear more clearly what you're saying. Is that something that you might do for tomorrow?
Yes, I think I should be able to come up with that for tomorrow.
That would be fantastic, because I know that Grace and Ifani, did you get a chance to see on the Facebook page what James was doing? Yeah, and but we've got a couple of other folk here who weren't in the training, James, and so I can let them get into the Facebook area for them so that they can catch up with what you're doing and what you're facing and dealing with, because I would love to be able to connect them to what you're doing. And Ifanya, yes, go ahead. Okay.
James, I think I did get it, some bits and pieces of what he's doing and the challenge he's facing, which most NGOs like him face.
Yes.
The community leaders want money from him.
Yes.
For him to be able to do good.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think with this training, the approach, he may learn one or two approaches to be able to address those issues, because the mindset is that James gets millions and millions of dollars.
And so they want some of that.
They want some of it.
Sure.
And James is here to nickel and dime them.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, James probably doing the things he's doing out of his own pocket.
Yes.
And that's the mindset. And unfortunately, he's hitting brick walls. And another thing is also the approach that he used ab initio, because to try to get them. So I think in this meeting and with these connections and collaborations, we'll be able to maybe harness and pick off of each other's experience to see, get best practices. So James, if you don't mind, I would like to maybe, we would like to have this conversation further with everyone here, because it's beginning to seem like a collaborative strategic partnership. Because
mm-hmm.
I found out again yesterday and throughout this whole session that the things that Grace has that I need, that my organization would definitely benefit from. And I need to understand those things. There's some things that Fernanda has that I basically need, some expertise. Because when she shared yesterday, there was something I'm like, wow, she has a grasp and a hands on the human capital side of things. So those are things that we might need. There are things that Daniela also has. So I think building this collaborative partnership and coming up with some kind of initiative to be able that we all can lean to, not just for support, but also for courage to face some tough things down the road. Because change is not the easiest thing, especially the person who have to go to make those changes. Because some people are stuck in their ways, and some systems have existed for centuries that penetrating the systems and breaking them down, then transforming them is a little bit challenging. It will need the collective support, input, and encouragement from people who are also going towards operating in that level of leadership. You talked about legislative style of leadership. But when you look at most of the successful leaders, they are not the legislative type of leadership. We're told in some of these Fortune 500 CEOs, is you have to be arrogant. You have to take decisions, you know, just take it because you are it, and that's it. So it kind of, you know, when you looking at the human side of it, so we're looking at a very good way to do it, and you're looking at somebody who's supposed to model that behavior, and they are not. They write books differently. So there's a whole lot of things for us to learn. I'll just give it that for now.
And that's accurate. Having even just a small group and a growing group, this group will grow in time, as peers, to utilize one another as, you know, as resources, just even sometimes just for accountability, just to say, have somebody to talk to who understand some of the pieces that maybe sometimes others do not quite get yet, or whatever. It can be invaluable just to have that kind of place to go and person to speak to. What can I do? What's an idea? How can we work on this? Sometimes it's just a very simple matter of, hey, what are you up to now? And hearing from one another. And other times it's like, I really need to, you know, think about this. I need some ideas. I need to brainstorm. You know, can we just talk about these things to try to get some idea? So having a peer group, I mean, this is all of the, you know, you speak about leaders, and you know, most leaders, in fact, are not one person alone as an island with absolutely nothing around them. They've usually got a support group. Now, how they use that support group varies according to the leadership style, personalities, and whatever else. But no person gets to where they are on their own. Not any of us. At different stages, we have mentors, we have friends, we have support systems, we have families, we have peers, we have people that we watch from afar, and things that we emulate, things that we, you know, we grab and make use of. You know, we could not have got, none of us could have gotten where we got to today. We couldn't even be using a computer today without others. But then in the important level for as we move forward as change leaders, and as you said, Ifanya, change leaders are often can feel when they're spearheading change, can feel very solitary and alone. But that's also why it's really important to have a group of people around you who you can turn to, just even if it's just to say something to them, to feel that you know that you're heard. You know, as human beings, we're quite simple. Sometimes we just need to be heard. Sometimes it's not rocket science. We don't need the latest and greatest advice or whatever. Sometimes it's just to have somebody who understands us, can allow us to move on forward powerfully. So I'm delighted to hear that you will reach out to James. James, please do, at the end of the day, we'd love to hear, you know, reflection from you and what you're doing. And as you were speaking, I was thinking one of the places, just the practical ways that you can begin the process of potentially adjusting expectations of some of your stakeholders is through using the simple tool of going to them and talking with them using the stakeholder driver tool. Because that way you'll shift the relationship with them. And that is something, you know, the how to go about making that difference is oftentimes one of the biggest challenges. And when you approach them to say, I really need some input and insight, and you are very, you know, you are critical for that, please allow me, you know, time to interview you to understand, set up the appointment for the next week or something like that, then go back to them the next week, and then have that kind of discussion with them that brings you to a whole other level. And there might be the chance that some of these would end up having the same kind of profound impact that Infanya's experience was with the person, the board member that he spoke with a couple of days ago. And you can perhaps relate that story to him. But just as a simple tool and tactic that allows you to potentially build a different kind of relationship with essential stakeholders is to have that kind of a conversation with them. Because in the end, that's all we can do as humans anyways, have conversations. But what kind of conversations? Where are we going to take them? How are we going to operate? And this can, it's one way for you to begin to do something differently. You know, one of my favorite quotes, you know, and it's attributed to Albert Einstein, but who knows whether he really, it's not really clear that this was his statement, but it would absolutely be something. You can't expect to change, you know, to get a different result when you do the same thing over and over and over again, or doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome is madness, whichever way you want to look at it. And he said it a few different ways, apparently. But we have to, when we need to make changes, we need to do something that works, not just try one more time something that has never worked in the past. But sometimes we just don't know what else to do. So as a place to begin, to shift that relationship with essential stakeholders, some of the most difficult people in the world can be the most important ones. So again, in whatever way, in formally or informally, try to have that kind of stakeholder driver conversation where you work to understand what is really, what is driving them, what is under the hood, so to speak, of the in their life. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for taking the time to go through this and for the reflections. And I think it's interesting also for you to hear one another's perspectives, because it helps, you know, even broaden your own experience of the day. And it really does bring everything back to whether it was Grace saying at the heart of it, you know, it's still, it's at the core of what we do, of what the human element is. We operate at the personal level and then we expand out. And it's just this very simple expansion process. And one of the ways, let me see if I can find, just for visuals, it's not, again, it's not necessarily, well, let me see if I can find it. Yeah, here we go. One of the other dimensions of the Transcillience framework that underpins all of this thinking, that I systematize the thinking into this Transcillience framework, is that we're not boxes as much as we're maybe more like onions. And so we are, you know, we do have this core, the individual level, which, you know, we're a little bit like an iceberg. People see the tips of who we are through our, what we say, what we speak about, how we present ourselves, how we operate in the world. But still, most people only see, and the tip of the iceberg is a generous amount of visibility of what people see of us.
Karen, can you zoom in a little on the... Can you zoom in on the image?
Sorry. Let me, yeah, because the writing's a little bit small. Does that help? That's a bit better? Yeah. Okay. So as individuals, you know, how many hours of the day do you speak to, just think about it, just narrow it down to one other person. How many... Even the person you speak to the most in your day, about how long in a day do you speak to them? Just, you know, maybe, oh, I can't see this, I can't see the chat. So just quickly, just log yourself on and just say, what, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half an hour, that you actually speak to one person in the day, one specific person. I can't see anything in the chat because I've got my screen share on. So
speak as in literally like talk, or speak as in we're texting all day?
Well, yeah, I guess you speak as in either texting or talking, so that, yeah, speak as in texting or talking, and then I'll qualify as we go.
Because like my boyfriend and I are like talking like all along the day, like how are you doing, what are you doing, that's right. But like since we wake up till we go to sleep,
yeah, so that's, in actual fact, that's not all day. Like it might be a three or 4 minute text time here, or 5 minute or 10 minute text exchange here, and then later on another text exchange. Can you just guesstimate an amount of time? I just want to point something out here. So if you can turn it into a figure of some kind. Try to just do a quick calculus of the amount of time. Any idea?
Maybe a couple of hours, maybe three.
Okay. And mostly you're texting. What's your texting rate?
What do you mean, texting rate?
How many words per minute do you text?
Well,
you haven't thought about
that. Never thought about that.
That's my point.
So like an average text may have like probably 8 words.
Okay, 8 words. And how long does it take you to do your 8 words? And so you said how many hours again today at eight words a minute?
Eight words per message. Like,
and how long does it take you to text the message?
I don't know, 10 seconds, 15.
Okay. So what's that? 15, even, and let's round figure it.
Okay.
You said 15, 10 a minute, 15 a minute. I mean, if you want to, how can we round figure this? But part of what I wanted, where I want to go with this, so you can come up with, you can be thinking the numbers at the moment, but part of where I want to come up with this is, we think at around 400 words per minute, each one of us, around 400 words per minute. So even while you're texting a few words per minute, okay, even if it was 100 words, even if you were really good at texting 100 words per minute, which I doubt, you would still be connecting with that. And sorry, again, how many hours a day?
I'm guessing 3.
Okay, so just say I'm being really generous. Just say you can text at 100 words a minute. You know, that would be a whiz, you know. So 100 words per minute, and you do that for 3 hours a day. That's the equivalent of, that's 3 hours. Oh dear, I've got to get, who's better at math at the moment? I'm thinking about too many other things. But anyway, so just a quick calculation. What's that? 60 times 300 times 3, compared to if there were 400 words a minute for your waking hours. You know, I should have really done the math of that, but I wasn't planning on going here. I should have done the math in advance so I had some idea of the numbers. But I think you can see where I'm going, that you live with you at a rate of 400 words per minute for all of your waking hours. Even the person who knows you most is getting this compared to maybe, you know, if I don't know whether you can see me. And anyway, getting, you know, maybe, I don't know, a 20th of you in a day. And I think I'm being generous in the numbers there. In other words, even the person who knows you the most at the moment only sees a little bit of you. Because you can't share every thought, every whim, every feeling, every emotion, every. So this is just to say that who the world knows is just a tiny little piece of who you are. And there's a lot going on in each one. We're processing, we're thinking, we're rethinking, we're adjusting, we're deciding, we're backing off from decisions. I mean, there's all this sort of stuff, complex stuff going on. And then we allow a certain amount of us to show. But all of that stuff that goes on in our life is cumulative and is who we are. It's who we are. So that was just to say, okay, this little individual piece, and then if you imagine for a moment that what's going on in reality in the world is you've got all of these tips of icebergs that are encountering one another. We're not always encountering, or we're not always aware of all of the below the surface parts of the icebergs, what they're all doing in our global affairs. Is there anything useful for this other than noting that there's a lot going on in the world that we haven't figured out and that we're not sharing? And, you know, there are so many dynamics in the world. And then, you know, when you get out, you know, you go into your community level and you're dealing with family members. Sometimes we say, yeah, but yesterday you said this, but we haven't kept up with what's happened with them since. You know, something may have happened to them since, and yet we give them a hard time for what they did yesterday. Anyway, all this is just to say it's a complex world. And so as you go out to the next level, you go from the community level into the national levels, where you then have not only individuals, but you have groups of individuals that form their own character and dynamics. Those character and dynamics of those institutions then interact. And we endeavor to navigate those organizational levels. Then we get to the global levels, where we've got governments interacting with one another, with all of the sub-levels of complexity, the individual levels. So when you meet an ambassador, for example, a leader in the role, and if they're a plenipotentiary ambassador, that means they've got all the rights and authority to channel, at least, or to, in some cases, make certain decisions on behalf of the country. And they have their own personal issues going on of challenges, emotional challenges, family situations, kids going to school or not going to school, wives and children, kids dealing with sometimes with suicide or just boyfriends or girlfriends or schooling concerns or getting into the university that they want to, where to send their kids in the world when they know they move all over the world. All of these pieces are, you know, come into each meeting that you have with them. When governments interact, you're in fact, there's kind of this interaction level going on at all these levels. And depending on the uniqueness of that individual, you deal with various, some will wear their lives on their sleeves more than others. Others have learned to totally tamp that down and subsume it. Sometimes for safety reasons. Sometimes it's for the safety and longevity of their own families. I mean, there's such a diverse set of realities when you get out into this international, intergovernmental levels of engagement. But even at these lower and lower levels, you know, in terms of going out in the circles, and you can just see that the complexity is exponential. But even at the personal level, we all know how complex it is to live our own lives. Takes us all our time. So this is just to bring awareness to the complexity of all of this. And also as to the reason why it is important to not just take things at face value, but to at least allow people, again, through the conversations that we have, through understanding people's aspirations, goals, and objectives, through understanding the challenges that they face. And it's probably right at this instant, and it's not always the biggest challenges forever. Some of them are perpetual challenges that seem to always have a lifetime, but they take on different shapes. If you dig in further, the challenge at that time is a little bit different. So just being aware, for a start, when you engage in relationships, that we're dealing more with these layers of complexity. This is not meant to say that therefore it's hopeless and it's endless, but it's more to say when you speak with somebody, you realize you're speaking to the very tip of the iceberg, not just the part that's above the water. from the tippy tip of the iceberg. And just to remind you that you've only got a little bit of the picture. And when it's important, it's when that relationship is important, it is so critical that you do go in and delve a little, not pry, but make a genuine relationship, because people want solutions to their problems. Now, as Ifania said earlier, sometimes people don't really want solutions, or what seems to be a problem from my point of view to them is not. So having that clarity about what they think is the problem is really helpful, because that means you don't have to keep visiting them and saying, here, why don't you move into this homeless center or this home, or whatever it was. It's clarifying. So all of this is there to clarify, because it's when we live in a fog that we dwell in indecision. And as leaders, we do need some level of clarity. Okay, sometimes you have to make decisions even when things aren't perfectly clear. And you'll know those moments and you will make those decisions. I know that you are those kinds of people. But if there are things that can help disperse that fog, then it's really important to do so. And that's just having that clarity about the complexity and the levels at which, and that also helps you understand. When you do go and speak to somebody, if they are a local government person, then you realize they're thinking about these types of issues. And underlying that, they've got their more family, or even, you know, their larger family concerns, as well as their own personal life concerns, which may be focused on career, or it could be just, you know, focused on survival issues or welfare, i.e., you know, pay or whatever. When you speak with a traditional leader, or a religious leader, you understand that they're dealing with those realms and they are dealing with those others. So you've got different ways to speak to people, and having that clarity about having ways to speak to people and allowing them to feel that you are a person they can speak to. Because you are aware of their levels of concern is powerful. If you feel somebody understands you by whatever means you believe they understand you, are you more likely to want to talk to them? Or do you prefer to go and talk to somebody that you have no idea who they are? It's just simple. But so then it comes back to questions of how do people get that as quickly as possible, the sense that you really do understand them. And so I heard somebody use the analogy one time. So, you know, you've got a really bad headache, you know, a headache that goes to the level of a migraine, so that you go to the doctor. And you say to the doctor, you know, I've got this migraine. And then he says, you've got Dr. 1 and Dr. 2. Dr. 1, yeah, well, you know, you either need to, you know, take some stress off your life, or, you know, how are you sleeping, or what are you eating? Or usually they don't ask you that sort of thing. Here, I'll give you this prescription. How long have you had the headache for? I'll give you this prescription. Here, go take it. Or you go into maybe Dr. 2 and they say, yeah, I get you. I lived with this migraine for 3 weeks one time, and it kept coming back until I found out a way that I could deal with it. which doctor of those two, Dr. One or Dr. Two, would you be more likely to do what they suggest that you do? You can just put up a finger, one finger or two fingers. Two. Pretty simple. Again, not rocket science, but we forget these things when we get into the professional environment or into international relations or whatever it might be. So again, just by getting connected with people and understanding what they are dealing with, that they feel that you understand, that is the beginning of a solid relationship. And that kind of understanding that and then acting on that as you work with people, you don't have to tell them how to fix themselves. But when you begin with understanding and them knowing that you understand their situation, and what's the best way to understand their situation? What's better than asking them? It's almost so silly how obvious it is, but how many people do it? And it's the doing that makes the difference. And so then when people feel like you've still got the responsibility to have a solid program, to have a good communication system, to be able to articulate beyond that moment of understanding, to be able to articulate how solid your program is, what it will really do for people, how you're operating. You've got to have all your other systems in place. You've got to be solid financially and not disappearing the next year because the IRS came in and took you away because you weren't filing your taxes or something like that. Absolutely, all of those things are essential, and I am not at all. In one of my lifetimes, I ran a small bus charter and tour operating company in New York City. one of my many lifetimes. And part of the reason why I was asked to go there is because the people who were having problems with the company knew that I was pretty good at project management, so to speak, and dealing with difficult situations. And so, one of the biggest issues was that A, it was losing money, and B, the IRS was after them. So, and I was given the request not to close the company, which of course the first thought is, well, shadang, close the company. But no, take care of the IRS issues so that the people whose names on that IRS issue are not tracked down by the IRS and have their houses taken away and things like that. Solve the issue and save the company. So that's what I had to do. And I did it. It took me 3 years to clean up all the IRS, to sell off old buses, to buy new ones, to turn it into a profitable, it wasn't making lots of money at the time that I sold it off, but I did sell it off as a profitable company that had a base of customers, that had a life and a future. I just didn't want to stay running a bus charter and tour operation business in New York City for the rest of my life, so I sold it off. But the point there is, why do I say that? Is I know what it's like to have employees. I know what it's like to hire and fire employees. I know that you have to have all of the systems and the HR in place and your financials and file your taxes. I had my landlord was the MTA, the Metropolitan Transit Authority. I had to renegotiate the existing agreement that I had, and I was also the landlord for a number of other companies and including a couple of bus companies that I am sure were run by the darker underworld of New York. But anyway, so And even one of the times I had to go down to the back of the property and ask my employees, can you stop shooting guns back here? You know, so I have actually had some experience, not only in the project management side of fleets of boats, staying on budget, organizing people, mechanics, supply chains, budgets, training, educating, handling international. So I've dealt with a lot of that sort of stuff. So believe me, I do understand business, what needs to be done, and how to go about do it so that you can succeed. I do have experience with that too. And it's precisely because of that kind of experience, those years of experience, with years of experience working around the UN environment, where I would form, literally, I would form working groups of diplomats. The most effective stuff was done by forming working groups of diplomats, not through forming NGO groups, though NGO groups are needed also. Because of having had that type of experience, I was a consultant for the UN CIO, Chief Information Officer, end of 2017, to help them re-envision how their ICT network, international, or the information, ICT, information communications technologists network. So all of the, you know how the UN has like about 30 organizations, World Food Bank, UNICEF, this, that, and the other thing, 30 of them. Well, each of those organizations is a huge organization. They've got, most of them have got a board, most of them got a CEO, a CFO, a CIO, and every kind of CI something. And this network was made up of all of the CIOs of each of those companies. So in part of the UN's agenda for digital transformation, to digitize themselves, to get out of paper and whatever else, to take everything onto to digital, there's this concept of digital transformation. Well, if anybody has studied in the realms of digital transformation, you know that the digitization process is a part of that, but it's not the only part, and the weakest part, the part that people don't usually get right, is dealing with the human element. Mindset changes, adaptations of daily processes and the ways people relate and talk and communicate. So part of what I had to do was to help to create a vision paper for that ICT network so they could see a way through the woods, so they could see how they as a unique group could contribute to that larger process. So I've worked in all of these spheres, and the pieces that I've taken out of all of these are what I've distilled down into this as the core. This is just the beginning, but it's the core. And when you get this core right, then all of the other stuff that you need to put in place to be a powerful, effective, impactful organization in the world, you've got the core in place that is needed. But this is the piece that has been so desperately missing from so many places, and why I'm focusing on this here. So yeah, I could go into, I go into all the other stuff, but I'm not going there, because this is what we're focused on. And I just wanted to, I guess that's just a really long way of saying that, and 3 days of this, it's going to probably be hammered into your heads one way or another. But I know that as you leave from the 3 days, life comes crashing in or whatever. So as much as I can get you to think, see, and put a couple of simple systems in place for your personal life and for your organization where possible, and sometimes part of where you can practice is putting it into place in your personal life. And we'll get into more of the action sort of stuff tomorrow. Today, I really wanted to look at some of the more leadership stuff and why it's important for you to have a vision for yourself as leaders who really can, you know, have confidently go out, even with the most difficult stakeholders, and develop the kinds of relationships that will pull you forward in ways that almost nobody else could. So that even James could have the confidence to go out and to have those types of conversations that will make a difference. Will it fix everything in an instant? No. Will you need to have those conversations with quite a few people? Probably, yes. But those conversations can be valuable and meaningful to you and to them, as we went over yesterday. So that by having this, being able to see this way through even the most difficult situations is what is important. So I've talked enough for this morning. Well, at least for this part of this morning. I'm going to give you your well-earned break so you can get up, stretch your legs, jump up and down. I probably should have you go and do some jumping jacks or something. But, you know, feel free even during this, you know, to stand up and stretch your legs whenever you feel the need to as we're going over this. But so I'm going to give you 15 minutes. 15 minutes bio break and coffee break or lunch break or whatever it is, and we'll see you back in 15 minutes. Okay?